as a procedure,
we invite the agency to make a presentation around these issues, political outcome, some of the issues, and then after that we will have FFC will also come in for the same. Without much ado, I will then request that we do introduction. Before I do that, quickly introduction of the staff. The one who was active, make sure that we lend the chair, it's Majalava, who is the community secretary. And then we have got Mwabe. I confused Mwang and Mwabe. Mwabe is our researcher. Mwomani also is the content advisor teacher. And then our researcher, Umu Kusuke. And then Asanda is our main researcher. I'm sorry because I didn't mention the other names, so I must remain to to that. Well, so this is an assistant secretary, then Selina Kali. Yeah, he's the secretary to the chairperson. Oh, there's also a communication officer, Felicia. Okay. So this is the team of the committee held here in Parliament. And then without waste of time, I'll ask the honourable.
Ke a leboga modulasetulo, nna ke ntate Maisela wa Maisela, ke leloko la komiti e ya tsa bophelo mo palamenteng. Ke a leboga.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Mbulelo Nkonzo, a member of this committee.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Bonkantan Novendaba. I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Good morning, Chair. Thank
you, Chair. My name is Pets Bande. And this is the Twitter committee.
Thanks very much.
I'm a new member. My name is Ryan Hugo from the DA. Appointed to this committee of health, so I'm a new member of parliament. I thank you. Can I have the program maybe of the proceedings?
Thanks very much. Can you join us that other side? That side is normally official, so that's why I never thought you were a member. Yeah. That's next to Sivan. Thanks very much, and you are very much welcome to part of this family of health. And then we will then ask guests to introduce themselves before I come to age in this office. Can you start?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Kemi Oluwole. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Morning, Chair. My name is Kapa Lusoro. I focus really on policy and legal research within General Service Parliament.
Okay. So everybody is 18. Can I then ask the office of the
Minister? Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, other colleagues around the table. My name is Andries Tsegeto. I'm the business executive from the Office of the Auditor General, responsible for, amongst others, the health portfolio.
Good morning, Chairperson and the members. My name is Thembile Mbane. I'm one of the managers at AG.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Mbonso Chauke. I'm the manager of the health portfolio.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Maraiko
Snaitan,
senior manager
of the health portfolio. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Sipo Sandi Kibandu. I'm the liaison officer for the Eastern Cape office.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Corey Pretorius. I'm a Senior Manager with AGSA.
Good morning, Honourable Members.
Thanks very much, as I've indicated, we've requested this meeting to deal with some of the issues that are related to Bid for Health. But before I go there, request the Secretary to give any apologies so that he will deal with apologies. We've already indicated the apology of the chair. He said he's not feeling well, so he's impossible to be able to work.
I received an apology from Mr. Mapanga. He's attending public hearings in agriculture. Ms. Adams is not well. Ms. Opane is attending party commitments. Mr. Imam Sheikh is attending private meetings in Tanzania. And to send the call minister. Ms. the head slide with me.
No, thanks very much. Without waste of time, we'll then hand over to the Office of the Auditor General to present their reports on the audit outcome for the Department of Health and the health sector is in terms of how the
thank you, Honourable Chairperson. First and foremost, Honourable Chairperson, let us wish the Chairperson a speedy recovery in terms of her health. Secondly, let's congratulate you on being nominated and elected. And then in the third instance, let's also congratulate and welcome the new member likewise. Honourable Chairperson, thank you for affording us the opportunity to engage with the committee in terms of assisting you with your BRRR processes. Honourable Chairperson, as you've noted, the purpose of the engagement here today is to come and provide the committee with feedback with regard to the audit outcomes of the current financial cycle. I'd like to highlight, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, that you know, if you take the health portfolio slides for BRRR and you go compare them to any comparable or any other portfolio out there, you know, bearing in mind the number of entities, you'll find that the number of slides and the number of information that we have to present here today is quite a lot of information, so we'll be guided by you in terms of what we need to present, because we are not just doing a presentation on the audit outcome, you know, the 1+2=3. We are also giving you some form of feedback in terms of the sector and the service delivery aspects with regard to the portfolio as well. So we'll also be guided by you, and we'll try and focus on certain key slides or certain key messages. So while the information is in the slides, maybe we'll over one or two or three of the slides and just focus on the ones where really the key attention, or we want to draw key attention on them. But again, if there's questions with regard to those slides, maybe that we're going too fast or or not providing the necessary attention will be guided by the committee and the committee members in terms of, you know, if there's more clarity or questions required. Like I said, because we are also driven by the size of the slides we're trying to get through, and it's quite a lot of information that we have to share with you here today. So, Honourable Chairperson, by way of starting, I'll first quickly go through our reputation promise. I think we are quite all well versed with what it is that the AG does in terms of our mandate to do our audits to build public confidence by enabling governance, accountability through the audits that we conduct. Chairperson, the next slide just basically sets forth the role of the AGSA in the reporting process. So as far as we've already discussed, the committee is currently engaged in the BRRR process, and ours is to come share the outcomes to help you make informed decisions when you have to make decisions around the budgets within the portfolio. And then on slide four, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, the very colourful slide, you would recall that we also shared this slide with the committee during our presentation in May, where we included this slide. What this slide just sets forth to achieve is just to indicate that if one considers any portfolio that we operate within or we try and give feedback on, that we are not operating in isolation. And why do I say that? If you look at the overarching slide, the one with the numbers in terms of the border, that refers to the SDG, or the Sustainable Development Goals. Now, these goals are a number of goals that world leaders around the world came together at the UN. They decided what is it that current world leaders need to do and focus on to make sure that the world that we are living in is sustainable for future generations to come. So they identified a number of key goals which are quite critical in ensuring sustainability going forward for future generations. And then obviously, if you bring it closer to home, we deal with the NDP, which is the National Development Plan, and in the plan it also has certain focus areas, and you'll find that some of those focus areas actually correlate or are aligned to the SDGs. And then once you bring it even closer to home, you go to a particular portfolio, like the health portfolio, that's what we commonly refer to as the MTSF, or our Medium-Term Strategic Framework. In there, then again, you'll find a number of strategic initiatives and goals which are aligned to the NDP and ultimately aligned, especially in the health portfolio, you'll see we are quite closely aligned in terms of the SDG to goal number three, SDG number three. And then you drill it even closer down where you deal with the annual performance plan all the way down to target level. So you see the arrow there hitting the target in the middle refers that even when we consider an individual target within the APP, it actually forms part of a much bigger scale in terms of goals and achievements that we're trying to achieve. So that's just the background with regard to this slide. And the idea here is really to demonstrate that whatever we do in terms of even a granular target level should be achieved or earmarked at achieving impact. Honourable Chairperson, as part of the introduction, we've also decided on a theme as Office of the AG. We are all aware that the audit process is quite retrospective. We come in at the end, and we report and we give all information, you know, big, vast information to relevant stakeholders, including portfolio committees such as yourself. But, you know, over the past course of a couple of years, we've identified that there's been minimal traction in certain areas with regard to improvement. Things are not moving in the right direction at the correct speed. And then one really has to sit back and understand and analyze the environment and say, what is really lacking, or what should be focused on that could help us or assist us in driving the right behavior, right culture. And the theme that we are going with as Office of the AG in the current year is accountability, and the accountability model is included in the screen. If I can, with your permission and your indulgence, Chair, I'd like the committee members to focus on slide number six. So if one looks at the accountability model on slide number six, there's a little guy in the middle that puts his hand up saying, I'm an accountable person, and for me to be an accountable official, there are a number of things that I need to do. I need to plan accordingly. I need to define my targets. I need to make sure that I determine correctly what it is that I need to do. So planning is quite critical as a point of departure. And then once I've planned and I understand exactly what it is that I need to do and achieve, I need to go and implement proper controls and proper processes and implement the basics. That's depicted by the pie chart number three, where you see the little gears and the guy's hand there. So now I'm implementing controls to make sure that I achieve what I have planned for myself. in terms of what I'm trying to achieve. And then, obviously, as we go about implementing, we are required to do regular checks, regular monitoring, making sure that we stay on course, we identify problems if there are problems, we correct them if there are, and that you can only do if you do regular checks and regular follow-ups. The committee does quarterly interventions, quarterly reporting reviews with the officials. And as we are going about these quarterly engagements, monitoring and reviewing, and then we identify that we are not getting progress, and it's a result of maybe poor performance, we need to ensure that there's consequence management that takes place. And that's now where we act, when we realize that as I'm going across and trying to implement, I'm not achieving, it's important that we implement the corrective measures in that regard. And if consequence management is required, then that's what needs to happen to ensure that we achieve our outcomes. So the accountability model currently talks about outcomes and better audit results at the number six where the cup is. But I'd like to pause as well here, Chairperson, and say there's been quite a lot of talk with regard to the clean audit. Now, we all know that if you get a clean audit, it does not necessarily mean that there's service delivery happening on the ground. We acknowledge that. But more often, Chairperson, within our space, we've identified that if people implement the proper processes and proper controls, it becomes, in the financial management space, it also becomes culture, it becomes part of how they do things, and that also replicates itself through in your service delivery aspects as well. So more often than not, the entities that are doing well in the audit outcomes are also the entities that are able to report accordingly in terms of their performance from a service delivery point of view. So whilst there's no, you know, the inverse could also be true, because entities normally, when there are qualifications and disclaimers, are also entities when normally you can correlate and see there's potential problems with service delivery as well. So the reason why we brought in number six there is to say that correlation with the culture and the right way of doing things is often replicated in service delivery, and when you see the people in terms of the performance acting accordingly, that we achieve impact, and the impact being providing proper healthcare services of the right quality to all the people that are required to receive the healthcare services. So that's the accountability slide, just in terms of the behavior, making sure that we plan properly, we implement appropriately, we monitor and we supervise as we're going about implementing, and ultimately we drive the right cultures to achieve impact in our respective portfolios. That is the AG's theme for the current financial year. Now, Chairperson, just as a way of a quick reminder and a refresher, the Office of the AG gives us feedback in terms of three areas. In terms of the Public Audit Act, you are required to look at your financial statements like normal auditors would do. So 1 plus 2 equals 3, that is what you have included in your financial statements. So those are the officials that are responsible for making sure that I tick off the invoice, I record it appropriately in the financial statement. But because we are government, and our government is an expenditure-driven government whereby we take money so that we can try and achieve certain goals and objectives, as we've already discussed, it therefore means that we are also required to report in terms of our performance. And therefore, the AG will also give you feedback in terms of performance information. Now, the type of feedback that the AG gives us, we actually just look at how reliably you have reported as a portfolio. So if a portfolio had 10 targets, and they say, I'm reporting I've only achieved 2, and the evidence shows that they've only achieved 2, then they've reported correctly, and we cannot fault them for that. So we will not raise any significant issues. It is then for oversight structures such as yourself to take the discussions further and say, but hold on, you ask for money to say you are going to achieve 10 targets, why did you only achieve 2? What's happening in terms of your performance? What are the root causes for things going wrong in the environment? So that's the one area that we give feedback on in terms of performance reporting. But because we are also an or country whereby we are governed by laws and regulations, we also give feedback in terms of compliance with key legislation. And I'm saying compliance with key legislation because there are a number of laws and regulations out there. We don't give feedback in terms of all those laws and regulations. It is just key legislation, especially around the PFMA or MFMA in the local government space, but key financial legislation, supply chain management, etc., etc. So we'll give feedback if there were significant non-compliance in this regard. We'll raise a finding, a material finding on the audit report. And hence, if one refers to the audit report issued by the Office of the AG, although it's one report, it will actually contain three separate sections, one dealing with the financial statement, one dealing with your performance information, how reliably you've reported, and then one dealing with the status of your compliance levels with regard to key legislation. And these are some of the amendments which have also been made to our current year audit report. Last year we had, you know, we reported differently, but in the current year you'll see it is a clear section that deals with the financial statements, compliance, and then performance information. And honorable members must always keep this slide in mind as we go forward in terms of the feedback we'll give. It will be linked to these three key areas. Just before we continue as well, honorable chairperson, what makes this portfolio also different is that as the office of the AG, we also do additional work, what we call the sector work. So yes, we come in, we do the normal audit as required by the legislation, the Public Audit Act, but we also then go and try and look at some service delivery element. From the AG point of view, we call it a sector audit, which is now where we go and we look and say, there are a number of role players in this value chain who must all provide their own level of assurance of their role and give their own inputs in order to make sure that this whole value chain of health portfolio is servicing and meeting its objectives and requirements. To that effect, we then decide and pick on certain focus areas as discussed with the minister and the accounting officer and some of the officials at the MINMEC and Health Council, etc. And then we decide on certain focus areas where we feel attention needs to be given or there are still shortcomings and give certain feedback in terms of those key focus areas. So that's a different report which we issue. But in the current year, honorable chairperson, honorable members, we are not going to issue a report because we issue this report every 2 years. If members will recall, when we did the presentation for the previous report, which we did in 2015-16, the members were quite clear in requesting maybe just a gap year as well for whatever findings we reported to be implemented, you know, to follow up and make sure that the recommendations are being implemented. So we'll issue a formal report again next year. But because we are not issuing a formal report does not mean we didn't do any work. So we've done work still in the same areas for the current financial year, but the reporting will only be limited to what we have in the slideshow here today. So you'll get a similar feedback, you'll see, you'll be able to track from that report we presented in March to up until the feedback we're giving you now, has there been any progress, and our feedback will also be structured in that way to give you an indication whether there was feedback, progress in those areas or not. So, honorable chairperson, what are the types of outcomes we give you feedback on when we give feedback in terms of our audit report? The first type of feedback that we give in slide 9 is the clean audit or the unqualified opinion with no significant findings on performance information, nor on compliance. And it's important that we understand that in order for one to say I've got a clean audit in terms of our definition, it means all three criteria has to apply. You need to be financially unqualified, so you need to have sound financial management, 1 + 3 = 3. Then you need to make sure that you reported accurately in terms of your performance information, and you also did not have any significant non-compliance with key legislation. So all three areas, like the three guys who are running, have to be applicable before you can get the green block. Then we move from the left to the right. Unfortunately, we move then from good to bad. We end up with a disclaimed opinion, which is the real worst opinion that one can really get in terms of the audit outcomes. This is now where people have produced financial statements, but they do not even have supporting evidence to support whatever they've reported and communicated in terms of the annual report, and therefore we cannot even express an opinion in terms of that. Where the bulk of government normally sits in, honorable chairperson, honorable members, is in the yellow block, where financially we are okay, we are unqualified, but we still have issues with regard to either performance information or compliance. And I'd like to, the reason I'm singling that out is because sometimes it's easy to fix things via journals. So accounting is easy, you find out that this is how it should be accounted for, you go process and you make the adjustment and your financial statements are able to fairly reflect your position. But your compliance, you either complied or you didn't comply. And that's where some work is still required in terms of general outcomes, in terms of performance reporting and then also compliance. Honorable Chairperson, I didn't mention in the beginning of the slide, but you see we've got quite a big delegation, so we are going to share the workload amongst ourselves. I'm going to hand over to my two colleagues on my immediate left here, who will deal with the actual audit outcomes of the national portfolio. And then once that's done, we will delve into the outcomes of the financial outcomes of the national department with the 9 provincial departments. Once that's done, we will then delve into the sector focus areas, now the real meat of the focus areas as we discussed from a service delivery point of view. I thank you, Chairperson.
Dealing with audit outcomes of the portfolio. So if I can direct you to the first figure, If you look at the four-year trend, the overall audit outcomes of the portfolio, they represent a stagnation. If we look at the 2016-17 year, the Council for Medical Schemes and the Medical Research Council obtained a clean audit. The National Department of Health and the Office of the Health Standards Compliance had an unqualified audit opinion with findings, and the CCOD's audit remained outstanding as the entity did not submit the financial statements. The reasons for the National Department having material adjustments was due to accruals and commitments, and the Office of the Health Standards Compliance had material findings relating to your performance and compliance, which led to the unqualified audit opinion. If we move to the second figure, the compliance with key legislation, the National Department and the Office of the Health Standards Compliance mainly had findings due to contractual obligations not in within 30 days, and internal controls were not mature enough to prevent the incurrence of irregular expenditure. If you look at the last figure, the third diagram, there we assess the quality of your annual performance plan, annual report. The National Department here again and the Office of the Health Standards Compliance had material findings due to the customary indicators that were implemented in the provinces, and the Office of the Health Standards Compliance had material findings due to the APRs that were subtracted and then resubmitted, and management did not make any adjustments to the APRs. If we move to the next slide.
Just before we continue to the next slide, Honorable Chairperson, with your indulgence, there are two key messages which come out of this slide, and honorable members must bear in mind the first slide that we did, the three guys running. We said financial statements, then we said compliance, and then we said performance information. So you see the way in which the feedback is structured. We give you the financial outcomes, then the compliance block, and then the performance information block. And if one were to make a conclusion in terms of what the slide represents, whilst we commend and acknowledge the other entities who have achieved clean audit outcomes, we still see that there's a trend of the same entities which are lying year on year, if you look at it 3 or 4 years in the same areas, where there's really some challenges in terms of moving to the green. Like I mentioned, guys are still remaining in the yellow space. So basically guys or entities which have are financially unqualified but still encountering challenges on your compliance and still encountering some challenges on your performance information reporting. And then the last sort of feedback in terms of this slide and how it's structured, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, you will see on the left-hand side we're quite intentional in including 4 years. We're trying to link the outcomes to the MTSF period. So since this current dispensation of current committee came into place, up all the way up until the next elections, which are going to be 2019. So next year we'll add the fifth year, so then the committee can reflect and see over 5 year course what has been the real movement or lack thereof. And then we can have discussions in terms of you know, effectiveness of some of the recommendations that we make. Are some of our recommendations really being implemented? Because, I mean, if you take a history of 4 or 5 years and some of the entities still remain within the same sphere, I think that's the intention behind the slide. It's the three components, and then showing you ultimately the trend in the history over a 3 or 4 year period.
Part of the audit, we also assess the status of key controls in the areas of leadership, financial and performance management, and governance. And if you look at the portfolio, overall the key controls were good, with the areas that were concerning that related to the challenges that resulted in your unqualified opinions, as we spoke to on the previous slide. We also assess the assurance provided per level, where we looked at your senior management, your accounting officer, the executive authority, audit committee, and the portfolio committee. We assessed the portfolio committee as providing assurance, and when we came out with this assessment, we assessed the oversight role of the committee with regards to the budget process, the review of the annual reports, the audit reports, and quarterly reporting. At the Office of the Health Standards Compliance, the audit committee was not adequately composed, so they provided some assurance. And at the Council for Medical Schemes, the senior management did not have proper control over your performance reporting, which resulted in adjustments being made to the performance report. If I can move on to the next slide, first slide speaks about the quality of your annual performance report. And overall, if you look at the portfolio, the National Department of Health is based on program 5, where they have material findings on usefulness and reliability. And at the Office of the Health Standards Compliance, they have material findings and reported on reliability. And I've spoken to the issues where management did not make adjustments to APRs, where there were a few qualifications that were mentioned in the audit report. As part of the analysis of expenditure per program versus the achievements at the National Department of Health, if you look at the slide that we have up on the screen, we assessed all the programs at the National Department. We compared the budget expenditure with your actual spend, and then the number of planned targets with the number of actual achievements at the department. As part of the audit, we looked at program 3. Where you can see that 99.97% of the budget was spent for the 54% achievement of the target. And on program 5, we had a 99.9% spend with a 25% achievement on target. Overall, at a program level, there was 99.9% spend in terms of the budget and only 55% spend in terms of achievement of target. So it is recommended to the committee to follow up with the National Department of Health as to what were the reasons for the non-achievement of the target. Chairperson, as part of our value add initiative, we looked at two key projects at the National Department of Health, being the Siloam and the Tabang Hospital, which we will track until completion. We also looked at 24 projects out of the 1,006 projects that were still work in progress. As part of this value-add initiative, we assessed specifications on the project, the quality of work performed, and we also looked at the earned value analysis. Now, earned value analysis means for every rand spent, we assessed whether the project received one rand in value in terms of services. The most common finding that we found across the 24 sites that were visited was that your earned value was less than a rand, indicating that potentially your value for money was not achieved in terms of the amount spent on the project. 10 out of the 24 projects were assessed in not near the 1 rand expected value, and we did have significant delays on the Siloam Hospital over unresolved land disputes. So if we look at the next slide, here we set out the areas that we looked at, your scope confirmation, the quality of work, and your earned value analysis. And you'll see as part of the 24 projects that we assessed, your earned value analysis is indicated as intervention required by the pink color in the last column. Chair, the financial health in the portfolio improved over a 3-year period. We looked at all four entities, and all four entities had 2 or less unfavorable financial health indicators. So there was an improvement in the current year. The next slide, we highlighted your compliance with legislation and your quality of financial statements, but we touched on this earlier, so this slide is included for your information purposes. And then if we look at the irregular expenditure in the portfolio, 6.1 million rand of expenditure, irregular expenditure was incurred, and this related mainly to the Office of the Health Standards Compliance and the National Department of Health. Over the page, we look at your Section 4C entity, the International Health Laboratory Services. The entity received a qualified audit opinion, which represents a regression over the 3-year period. Some of the main reasons for the regression was due to inadequate systems being in place with the recognition of the recording of irregular expenditure amounting to 1.019 billion. Material uncertainty also existed around your going concern, with a deficit of 1.8 billion being incurred and your liabilities exceeding your assets by 19 million. Some of the main reasons of irregular expenditure here at the National Health Laboratory Services was due to competitive bidding processes not being followed, changes made on your expired contract, and some suppliers not submitting declarations of interest.
Chairperson, the root causes that we identified that resulted in the audit outcome was mainly due to the slow response by management in improving key control and addressing risk areas. We've also noted some of the commitments made by the minister in the prior years. And if you can see on this slide, we've indicated progress on two of the commitments, with one commitment being implemented. If we look at the first block, the National Department of Health and the Office of the Health Standards Compliance made progress with regards to processes being implemented to improve on the financial and performance reporting. And the HBRA system has been implemented by the National Department of Health to improve reliable reporting of health data.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you, Reshma. Honourable Chairperson, with your indulgence and permission, but this slide basically on page 24, slide 24 sets out to achieve, and I'm taking over intentionally from here, Reshma, because we now have to deal with the far right hand side of the slide. Honourable Chairperson, as you saw on one of the previous slides, when we're dealing with assurance providers, we said when one looks at the outcomes achieved by any portfolio, there were a number of assurance providers or role players who provided assurance in terms of the process. Senior management, accounting officer, executive authority, all the way up to portfolio committees. Now, in line with the theme that we requested in the beginning of the slide, or communicated in the beginning of the slide, we also have included in this slide a set of proposed commitments to the portfolio committee. And we use the word proposed explicitly because we don't want to sound like we are prescribing to the portfolio committee what to do. But we've given you feedback now in terms of at the national department and that portfolio, what are the outcomes, what are some of the key shortcomings that are still being experienced and some of the challenges still being experienced in that space. And we feel that we would really get progress or traction in the right direction if as a portfolio committee we also then focus on asking the department feedback in this area. So when the department comes and they give you part of the normal quarterly reporting, it's advisable that we maybe ask them to also give us progress in terms of their action plans. What is it that they are doing to address all the outcomes that they've achieved? What is it that they are doing to address some of the challenges that we've communicated to you today? Please ask them in terms of when they come and give you quarterly reporting, what is the status of the key controls within their environment? Have they improved controls around the accruals, around the commitment? Do they have complete listings for each quarter when they come in and request give you quarterly feedback? And then in the portfolio where there's irregular expenditure, ask them what is being done with regard to the transgressors. What is the root cause of why we are incurring irregular expenditure? Let them give you the detailed list of the names, the action that they've taken or the investigation that they've conducted in terms of trying to understand why things went wrong. You know, sometimes people misinterpret laws and regulations, sometimes it's oversight, but sometimes there might be something other lurking behind the decision that's taken not to comply with supply chain management legislation. And management must get behind the real story, the real root cause, and then come in and give on a quarterly basis feedback in terms of the progress they've taken with regard to transgressors. And then also in terms of the claims, we've identified in the current financial year that the portfolio faced quite a large number of claims. Some of the amounts were quite large as well, and this is a potential to really put a strain on the financial viability of the portfolio. So it's important that maybe as a committee it would be worth our while to also ask them when they come and give quarterly feedback, what is the status of the claims, what the claims relate to, what is the nature of the claims, how far they are, you know, maybe just a small matrix saying this is the amount, X percent is being paid out versus, you know, so you can check the history and see exactly is it the cause of concern for us and we don't find ourselves in a place of strain or an already tight fiscal space.
Chairperson, my colleague Mr. Julius will then present to you on the health sector audit outcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. So with regards to the audit of financial statements for the sector, there was an overall improvement in the results in the current year. The improvement coming from the Free State province. So Free State was able to address most of its qualification areas from prior, which was the accounting of the accrued departmental revenue, the irregular expenditure and commitments. This was with the assistance of the consultants and the provincial treasury. With regards to the compliance, there was findings relating to non-compliance with key legislation, except for the Western Cape. The compliance findings, most of them came from the fact that most of the auditees in the sector did not submit financial statements that were prepared in accordance with the accounting framework. 7 of the auditees submitted financial statements that required material adjustments, and only 3 were able to correct these adjustments, and they resulted in receiving unqualified audit opinions. And some of the other compliance findings were noted were the non-compliance with procurement management regulations, and also inadequate internal controls to detect and prevent unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. For the quality of submitted annual performance reports, we acknowledge and commend the sector for the implementation of recommendations by DPME and the AGSA interim audit. However, we're still noting that the entire sector still have material findings on usefulness and reliability. And this came from the fact that inadequate implementation of policies and procedures, and there are manual processes in place at the facility, and there's also a poor filing system.
Honorable Chairperson, again, if one recalls the previous slide that we did for the National Department and the Office and the CMS, I think if one looks at this picture and one just looks at the colors and we intentionally use red and green, green means okay and red, a bit of challenges still encountered within the outcomes, one can then see for the National Department and all 9 provincial departments, although there's an improvement in the financial outcomes, steady, small improvement year on year. You look at the purple is getting smaller and the yellow is increasing. There's still some work to be done in terms of this process, because it means 50% of the 10 departments out there are still qualified. So they're not able to produce financial statements which are credible, reliable, and accurate. So they are still experiencing challenges in terms of proper accounting principles. But more than that, if you continue to the right on compliance, barring one province, there's still a problem in terms of the remaining provinces in order for them to comply with key legislation, especially in the areas of supply chain management, and obviously linked to the ability to produce financial statements which are credible, reliable, and complete. And then on the right-hand side, also still facing some challenges, primarily in the area of also our reporting in terms of performance information. So they produce the annual performance report, but when we want to go and verify whatever is reported in the annual performance report, more often than not, it's not supported by reliable, accurate processes and information. So I think the message that one can take from here is the progress that's been made is too slow, and we should really look at intervening and making sure that these commitments and recommendations are implemented to get traction in the right direction.
And then when we look at the 3-year trend for irregular expenditure, there's also a slight improvement from prior year, from 7.7 million to 6.4 million in the current year. The biggest contributors of irregular expenditure are KZN, Free State, and Mpumalanga. And most of the reasons for why the irregular expenditure keeps occurring is the fact that the internal controls in place are not able to detect and prevent the occurrence of irregular expenditure, as mentioned before. And also, the provinces have inadequate systems to record the irregular expenditure. SEM continues to be a challenge in compliance. The unauthorized expenditure also shows an improvement, although it's very small, and then it's also a concern, because we still see KZN, Free State, and Northern Cape being the highest contributors of unauthorized expenditure. Also, the controls in place are not mature enough to prevent the overspending of the budget. When we move to the next slide, this just gives a detailed breakdown per province of the unauthorized and irregular expenditure. So with the findings that have been noted on the previous slide, we went and made an assessment as to what's the root causes for the occurrence of these findings. And the top three root causes which we've been reporting in the prior years are the fact that there's slow response by political leadership and senior management. Key positions remain vacant. As you can see from last year, it was only three provinces, and the current year it shows that seven provinces have key positions that are vacant, and inadequate consistent for poor performance and transgression. From these risk causes, we then propose or recommend the following. For the slow response by the political leadership and senior management, leadership and senior management need to take ownership or accountability for service delivery weaknesses and poor audit outcomes. As I have mentioned before, none of the auditees in the sector received a clean audit because they were unable to present credible financial statements that are free of material misstatements. A number of key positions remain vacant, which affect service delivery. We recommend that these should be filled as soon as possible, and it must be filled by officials who have competent skills. The lack of consequence for poor performance and transgression, we recommend that accounting officers should ensure that compliance findings are investigated, financial misconduct and any misconduct relating to supply chain management must be investigated, and where confirmed, disciplinary actions must be taken. The unauthorized and irregular expenditure also should be investigated promptly in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. I thank you, colleagues. I will hand over to my colleague to talk to the sector. Mr. BE, would you like to add anything?
Thank you, Chair. The next part of the slide now will deal with, we are done now with the financial statement, the 1+2=3 and the PFMS stuff. But I think we have, as the Office of the AG, like I mentioned earlier, we have an appreciation that you know, as government or certain portfolios within our government space, the portfolio consists of much more than just financial statements or financial outcomes and PFMA. There's actual real service delivery that needs to happen on the ground. And as part of our focus in terms of the health portfolio, when we consider the sector and how the sector fares in terms of its service delivery mandate, we identified four key areas or aspects where we want to give feedback on in line with the previous financial year. So in order for us to identify these focus areas, we have to identify first or understand first and foremost what is critical in this value chain, in this space, what is required in order to make sure that we provide quality healthcare services. And the four pillars that we've identified that are required in order for us to provide quality healthcare services are: you need proper infrastructure in order for you to provide quality healthcare services. You need proper facilities, so we focus on the infrastructure and the delivery and the planning and project around the infrastructure. Obviously, you need medicines, you need your pharmaceuticals in order for you to prescribe treatment for your patient and for your patients to get well, obviously. And then you also need medical equipment in order to treat your patient. And then you need a platform as well, an IT platform, where all of this information can be collected, collated, and adequately reported in a manner that allows the people and the users out there to be able to see. First and foremost, facilitates the process, because you need a proper system to deliver your services. But once you've delivered your services, you also need another system in order to report accurately, reliably, and complete in terms of the services that you've rendered. So hence the four blocks that you've seen there, those are the key pillars on which we did certain audit procedures, on which we are now going to give you feedback, Honorable Chairperson. Having laid the foundation, Chairperson, I'm going to hand over to Ms. Marita Snaikant now, who will deal with the detail with some of the colleagues of the bank.
Thank you very much, Chair and members. Just a little bit of feedback on the management of pharmaceuticals. During the previous year, 18.2 billion was spent by the provincial department on the procurement of essential medicines and their supplies. Currently in South Africa, 81% of our population, approximately 44 million people, is relying on the public sector for their medicine on a daily basis. So as part of this sector audit, we visited 40 clinics throughout the 9 provinces and also 9 medical depots. Currently there's 10 medical depots in South Africa, 2 in the Eastern Cape, which we only visited one of them. At 55 of the 40 clinics that we visited, and at all 9 of the medical depots we visited, we identified pharmaceutical stockouts on the day of the visit. And that is very important, because service is in terms of service delivery, when a patient visits a clinic on a daily basis, all the medicines must be there. So when a patient gets there, it can be that the medicine is not available and then they are sent home without any medication, or they are provided with a small supply and then asked to return on the next day or the next week, or they are referred to other clinics or hospitals in the area. So the first slide is a very busy slide, but it's divided into two parts. First, the medical depot, and the second one is the clinic. I just want to summarize it. For example, on the medical depot, why is there stockouts at the medical depot? I can group it into four phases. The first one is on poor supplier management, and the second one is on stock management. Poor supplier management, for example, where we indicate that pharmaceuticals are not delivered by the supplier within 21 days, then medicine is not available at the depot to send it out to the clinics when they request it. That is because the medical depot do not impose penalties on those suppliers for late deliveries, or sometimes they do not pay the suppliers within 30 days, so obviously they will first deliver to the medical depot by paying them first or impose penalties. The second part is on stock management at the medical depot. We look at storage practices, security controls, temperature controls, the stock management systems at the medical depot. In the next slide, I will refer to the samples just to get it more practical, just to make it a little bit more practical. In terms of the medical depot, we've been doing pharmaceuticals for the past 3 years. It's just to note to see the portfolio, there has been a lot of improvement in the 9 medical depots that we visited from the past 3 years up until now. Definitely they show the improvement at the medical depot. The second part is in terms of the clinics. I also want to summarize the two parts. We looked at stock management at the clinics and the distribution of pharmaceuticals. Stock management at the clinics, we looked at storage practices, temperature control, security control, and then how they use their stock management system, bin cards, whether it's updated, whether they have enough staff, whether the people from the district offices who provide the providers visit to the clinic. And then the second part is the distribution to patients, where we look at the waiting area, whether the chronic medication is pre-packed, how efficient are they working in the consulting room as well as in the dispensary, and how do they do recordkeeping in terms of the dispensing to patients. If I look at that for stock management at the clinic, it's the same findings that is recurring for the past 3 years, while at the distribution of our pharmaceuticals to the patient, there has been an improvement over the 3 years. The next slide is just at the medical depot, a few examples. The first picture is at the Limpopo medical depot. There is a picture of expired stock that was waiting for disposal on the day of the visit. Some of these stocks expired in February 2011, and we visited the depot in May 2017. There is a quarantine area at this medical depot, but the expired stock was so much that it was stored in the seating area as well as in the back of the warehouse. The second picture is the Northwest medical depot, where there is damaged stock on the shelf, and that is in terms of poor stock management practices. Because these stocks at the medical depot now can't go out to the clinics, and ultimately the patients at the clinic will not receive their stock. The third picture is Gauteng, where the CCTV monitors were not working on the day of the visit. There were 28 monitors, of which one of them was working, which is a security issue, because they, for example, if they sit in the medical depot on that specific day, they won't be able to pick it up. On the bottom part, the first picture is a Limpopo medical depot, medicine that is not moved to the shelf. These medicines were delivered weeks before we visited the medical depot, but it was not moved to the shelf because there is a huge vacancy rate and there was not enough staff for picking and packing available. And we will see from the photo they started to pick and pack not from the shelf because everything is standing here, so they started to pick and pack from those batches that's not in the shelf. The middle one in the bottom was in a cell, thermometer not working. This thermometer was calibrated in 2015, so that is also one of the reasons why the Medicine Control Council didn't issue a certificate or a license to the Quadrillion depot, because they had temperature control issues. The last picture is the Free State medical depot, where stock was kept in the walkways as there was no space in the medical depot. This was close to year end, when they had to spend all the money, so to use all the money they procured all the medicines, so that it's safe before the end of March, the financial year, but the medical depot couldn't handle all the stock that they secured. The next slide slide is just a few examples on the clinics. The first picture is in KZN, stock not rotated. It's the first expired first out method that they use. Here you can see in the storeroom, it's stored in boxes. They don't have any control over the quantities. There's no bin card. So they don't know really how much pharmaceuticals that they have in this storeroom. The second picture on top, medicine stored in the passage, and that is in Limpopo, where there's not enough space in the storeroom, so they had to store it in the passage where the patients are walking on a daily basis. The last picture on top, medicine stored with food, and that is because there was not enough space in the vaccine refrigerator to store these pharmaceuticals. Now, if food or beverages develop bacteria, at the end of the day, it can make that these medicines are not effective anymore, and obviously then you can't go to the patient at the end of the day. At the bottom, the first picture, medicine stored in the shower, that's a pre-state example. It's stored in the shower because there's not enough space in the storeroom. Second picture, medicine stored against the walls, outside the boxes and on the floor, it's because there's not enough space in the storeroom. The last one is a Mpumalanga example, where medicine is stuck up to the ceiling because there's not enough space in the storeroom. So if you see this at a clinic where the stock management is not happening, the nurses and the security managers will keep on ordering medicine because they don't know exactly what is in their storeroom to issue to the patient. That is in terms of the pharmaceutical. So the next one is on on the medical equipment. Again, a very busy slide. I will just summarize it. I want to divide it into two areas. The first one is on the use of medical equipment, and the second one is in terms of the maintenance of medical equipment. During the financial year, in the 9 provinces, we visited 2 hospitals per province, and we visited the radiology department as well as the neonatal ward. And for the previous year, we did exactly the same work, and for the follow-up that was done, we visited the same hospitals, except for the Western Cape, the different hospitals, because they didn't have any findings in the previous year. In terms of the use of medical equipment, sometimes you will identify medical equipment that is standing within the neonatal ward or the radiology department, that is, there's an error on it, but they're still using it because there's a lack of other medical equipment, but I will show some examples of it. Medical equipment not used due to maintenance and repair deficiency. Medical equipment not used because there's a lack of staff to use it. For example, an ultrasound machine is not used because they do not have a sonographer at the hospital. Medical equipment not used due to infrastructure deficiencies. That will, for example, be a CT scan or MRI scan that is not used because the aircon is not working. For an X-ray machine to work, it must be at a certain level of degrees within that specific room. And then the second part is in terms of the maintenance of medical equipment, where they are waiting very long for medical equipment to be repaired, and obviously then the machine cannot be used, and then the patients and the waiting list are growing, and the patients are referred to other hospitals. In terms of maintenance, they usually at a hospital have a clinical engineering department. What we identify there, there's a shortage of staff in the clinical engineering department, a shortage of essential equipment to fix those equipment on a daily basis. They don't have enough space in their medical workshop, and then there's poor record keeping on the maintenance of medical equipment. In terms of medical equipment, the first part is about the use of medical equipment, similar findings to the previous year. On the maintenance of medical equipment, we identified some improvements in terms of that. In the next slide is a few examples. The first picture is the Kimberley Hospital in the Northern Cape, where the fluoroscopy machine is out of order since February 2016. On the day of the visit, the machine was out of order for 16 months. The reason why this fluoroscopy machine was not working is because of the software problem. And the reason it was not fixed is because there was no maintenance plan in place for this machine, and the waiting list was growing whilst other patients that was urgent was sent to Bloemfontein, for example, for imaging. The second picture on top, the Pietersburg Hospital in Limpopo, angiogram machine not used since 2014. The day that we visited, it was 3 days later, and the reason why it was not working is because there was something wrong with the battery and the uninterrupted power supply. This machine is a machine worth 3.9 million rand that could not be used for 3 years, and patients were then referred to the George Mukhari Hospital for the imaging. The third picture on top is the Mpumalanga. What happens in Mpumalanga, for every district, they have a clinical engineering department per district. And in this specific district, they will send all the equipment that should be repaired or they think should be condemned to the clinical engineering department. And that is just a picture where all the equipment is lying, and they are waiting for the people to evaluate whether it should be condemned or whether it can still be repaired. And at that stage, there was not enough staff at that clinical engineering department to go through everything and evaluate the equipment without for repair or condemnation. At the bottom, Mpumalanga is the West Bank Hospital. This is the high care section in the neonatal ward that was not used on the day of the visit. This entire section was built and it is fully equipped. So because this high care section is not working, babies stay longer in the ICU before they can go to the general ward. At this stage on the day of the visit, they started to use this space to store all equipment because it's not used for medical purposes. The last two pictures is at the Addington Hospital in Table 10. It's the oncology machine that has been pieces since 2014, also for 3 years. At this stage, all the patients that required the services were sent to the Nkosi Albert Sisulu Hospital. And then the last picture is in a damaged incubator, which the nurses are still using. They use it because there's not enough incubators. So they fix it up with a plastic bag and in that is to keep the temperature inside for the baby. So that is just a few examples, practical examples, in terms of medical equipment. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm moving on to the infrastructure side. You will see on the slide on the screen that you see my areas of infrastructure that we looked at. The first one was project planning. In project planning, we look at the start of the project. We look at the supply chain management process. We then need our analysis. Then we also look at the project management part. Project management is basically the meat of the project. That is where we see the actual work being done, the excavations, the buildings, and so on. And then thereafter, following the commissioning and the use of those infrastructure projects. Honorable Chair, as Mareike indicated, in South Africa there's a very large part of the population that is reliant on the government, on the state, for their health care needs. Of every 10 people, 8 of them are solely reliant on government, and only 2 out of 10 have got access to medical aid. When it comes to infrastructure, Chair, it's a major area of spending. If we look at the National Department of Health, annually they spend in excess of 5 billion on the health facility revitalization grant. And when we selected projects to visit in the 9 provinces, we focused on those projects that are being financed through this health facility revitalization grant. And in the process, we visited 45 clinics and hospitals in various stages of infrastructure work. Some still in the planning phase, others while the work was being done, some at the end of the process to look at the commissioning. And in some instances, we went specifically to look at the rehabilitation and maintenance on infrastructure. Actually, if we go to the table on the top right-hand side of your slide, you will see that one of the most concerning areas with regard to infrastructure is the poor quality of work that government is receiving from the contractors doing work on our behalf. You will see that only in 2 provinces work of fairly acceptable standards were delivered. And if you compare that to what was found in previous years, this area is not showing any improvement at this stage. Equally important, Chair, is the next one, the delays in the completion of projects. When you look at the value chain for healthcare in South Africa, you will see that the availability of infrastructure plays a very key role there. And you will see that we didn't find any projects that was completed on time in the work that we conducted. Then we also saw that there was planning issues, infrastructure needs were not always correctly identified, that there was delays in commissioning of clinics and hospitals. Where the work was done, the construction work was completed, but the structures were still standing empty. And then we also looked at the standard for infrastructure procurement and delivery management. That is a new standard that has been introduced by National Treasury in an effort to improve the delivery of infrastructure by the South African government. There you will see that there were three provinces that haven't started utilizing the standard, although it was a requirement since the middle of last year. If I look at a very brief summary, Mr. Chair, of the root causes that we found, then you will find the one that has been top of the list for many years now, that the partners don't have sufficient capacity to implement projects, and that there's a heavy reliance on consultants and project managers by these departments. See, what we also saw is that there's a lack of consequences for poor performance and transgressions resulted in matters previously reported being repeated and action plans developed not being implemented. Chair, this lack of consequence management is a recurring issue, and what you will find is that health departments don't hold the contractors accountable for the poor delivery, especially when it comes to quality and producing on time, because their hands are not clean. They are not paying the contractors in time. And you can only go to court if your hands are clean. So as soon as they want to take these companies to task, the companies come back and say, but you delayed us. You didn't pay on time. You didn't provide the information as required. And then, I want to move on very briefly just to the next slide to talk to some of the pictures that you see there on top. Top left-hand side, hospital being built in Bloemfontein. If you look at the top right-hand two pictures, you will see it was taken in KwaZulu-Natal at the Tshishini clinic. And there you can see the equipment that Marika was talking about, standing unutilized. Government goes out, they secure the equipment, they put it into infrastructure, but it's not commissioned and utilized there. If you look further down on the screen, you will find two pictures there, taken at the Waterfall Clinic in Mpumalanga. A small project by today's standards, R9.5 million to do maintenance at the clinic. It was a 6-month contract, but in typical fashion, that 6 months became a year. And after a year, when the construction work was completed, they didn't move in and started utilizing the equipment that was provided to them. On the far left-hand side, actually you will see a photograph taken in Limpopo. Clearly not professional work being done. Work that is actually dangerous to the people that have to utilize this thing, where the live wires were just put into contact in an illegal way to be able to switch on this fan. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be taking you through the IT section, which forms the backbone for the financial systems and performance information. That's the systems overview, detailing some of the systems that we had a look at. On the top left, we've got the financial systems. Towards the right of the slide, it's the billing systems, and towards the bottom is what we call the AOPO system / operational system for the national department. For the 16-17 financial year, we followed up on prior year findings, and that follow-up was performed at the listed facilities made up of clinics and hospitals, rural and urban where applicable or where possible. And that's total about 21 facilities in all. As the scope for the prior year, the 15-16 prior year, we looked at network infrastructure, patient billing systems, as well as the pharmaceutical systems. And the findings that emanated from this review were issues such as system downtime, outdated infrastructure, lack of system validation, inadequately set up tariffs, which would allow proper invoicing, and as well as inadequate system validation controls, as well as not proper use of pharmaceutical systems and poor connectivity. Chair, what we have here, our five main findings which we followed up for the 16-17 financial year. These findings are made up of, which I previously mentioned, the lack of, outdated infrastructure, no validation on the systems, tariff codes not being set up adequately to allow proper invoicing, system downtime. Now, as you see below there, there's some of the root causes. We've identified some of the root causes, and then I emphasize that we've had minimal progress on these findings. Some of the root causes would be issues such as no maintenance, which would result in the system downtime or outdated system, no integration of systems, which would result in the financial system not talking to the billing system, and the setting up of tariff codes not talking to the financial system, and the system validation controls not being adequate to ensure that information captured on systems is accurate and complete. I will not go into the details of how each province performed. I'll just leave it on the screen. Thank you.
Thank you, Ponsor. Honorable Chair, with your permission, we are the tail end, almost there, nearly the finish line. And the last three remaining slides are just for informational purposes, Chair, really. The first one deals on slide number 52. It deals with the AGSA audit methodology improvements. You would recall, Chairperson, at some stage we used to give quarterly feedback to all our stakeholders, but the quarterly feedback we used to give was in the form of those smiley faces, those lots of red, then yellow, and green faces. And as of the AG, we also realized that at some stage, people were focused too much on the faces. They weren't focusing on the real issue and the discussion. They just didn't want to see the red faces. So we decided to enhance this process a little bit. And this process is also enhanced in a manner that we don't just do a high-level feedback on the quarter. Whatever we do then at that point in time, what we call the status of records review, will also allow us to be slightly more efficient and already start identifying, doing the risk assessment, seeing if things are in order at an early upfront stage. So it's really a proactive follow-up procedure process where we'll analyze and we look at financial and non-financial data, having engagements with management, and then we provide that feedback back to management. Ironically enough, Chairperson, if you look at on the right-hand side at the bottom, that little honey beehive that's there, it actually covers the same areas. So we must give you financial management feedback, we must give you compliance feedback, we must give you HR feedback, financial health. So it's more or less the same areas. And what we found it works well, which we'll continue, is giving you feedback in terms of the red, yellow, and green. Because if you see green there, then you know everything is going okay. But if you want to focus your attention on something that maybe requires intervention, we'll mark it red. And this is just for illustrative purposes. It's not actual reflection upon health. It's just to show the type of feedback we'll be giving it in terms of the focus areas. On the next slide, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members 53, that is just really a branding slide from the Office of the AG. We've done a lot of work to try and enhance our methodology to be a little bit more efficient, to be a little bit more relevant, so that we can offer a more value-add product. And you'll see, even the feedback we've given you, yes, we dealt with the financial statements, but we went down a little bit, we dealt with projects, we dealt with a little bit more what adds value in the environment or the portfolio within one audit. And then the very last slide, Honorable Chairperson, is if you remember, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, when we started the presentation, we said the theme for the current year is accountability. There was accountability model we shared, and now we've gone through the whole outcomes, we've analyzed the outcomes, we understand the root causes, and more or less where the areas are that we require intervention or some improvement on. But as part of that accountability model as well, there was an intelligent academic person or by the name of Robert Fleetgard, who developed this model in terms of accountability, and it was a little bit enhanced and tweaked by the Office of the AG to say, if you look at the variables that are involved when corruption is normally involved, monopoly, discretion, and accountability. Monopoly, we can't do anything about it. Government has got buying power in SA. So we have money, we drive the monopoly, we have to expand to achieve our goals and our targets. The discretion, people are delegated to make decisions. So you've got a delegation of authority, you must make decisions in order for service delivery to happen. And over and above that, there's also discretion in the sense that sometimes you have to take certain decisions in order to affect service delivery, which may not be in line with certain guidances and principles. But accountability is something within which we have control over, or within which that lies within our span of control. And in this environment, we've identified a correlation that where there's low accountability in terms of decision taken, in terms of our spending, it creates an environment where potentially corruption can thrive. And the inverse of this is found to be true, where accountability levels are high up, when there's this high level of discretion and this high level of spending, then it creates an environment where potentially there are no room for, or there's limited room for corruption to take place. And ultimately, Chairperson, when one considers what is the impact or the net impact of corruption, normally when there's high levels of corruption, it comes at the cost of service delivery. So the one goes up, the one goes down, or the one suffers in this regard. So this is just a slide that we're sharing as Office of the AG in terms of the accountability model. It's really focused just on the accountability. We're not saying we've audited for corruption, or there is corruption, or there isn't corruption. We're just saying we can ensure that by ensuring high levels of accountability, we take ownership of our environment to make sure that we do not create or we limit the opportunity where corruption can take place. Honorable Chairperson, I know it's been a mouthful, it's been a marathon session. So I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members again. We'll take questions and comments, and we'll be guided by you in terms of that process, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much for very elaborative presentation. But very informative. I'm sure members are more empowered now. It's now an opportunity for the members to ask clarification questions. This information is to empower yourselves so that when you meet with the entities and the department, you are able therefore to raise, be more empowered and be able fundamental issues that the department or the entities need to begin to focus on that process. So I give you an opportunity for members to seek for clarity on the presentation where you think you are not very clear and you want further elaboration of clarity.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to welcome the presentation from the Office of the AEA. I think this has given us more power to be able to grow our appetite better when informed and understanding where pitfalls lie. Also finding a way of working around those pitfalls as to when the situation, because if we take up 17, which is one of the core, you know, our core business, then the core business often of the entities that we have to be responsible for. That's what we can do. I thought that the head of the question is very clear, it's very safe, but at this time, it's very people friendly, easy to understand. So that is on the page for them to be, you know,
I also want to say thank you to the AGSA presentation. And quite a number of mindfulness than the classes in the report itself. And I think just clarity on the 1, 2, maybe other Northwest regressing. What are the issues in that province? Because yes, there are other provinces which also we could mention regression and things like that. But I also wanted to know something about the NHLS, which incurs irregular expenditure to the amount of 1.1 billion. And this is a concern, and quite a serious concern. And the heavy reliance on consultants is also mentioned. And I know it's not the first time that this is this is pointed out. Lack of consequence management, late payments, and equipment. But, you know, when you get to these institutions, you find all what you actually detected, like unutilized equipment and all that. As an office of the AG, how do you feel when you get to, you know, year after year, get back to the department with individual provincial office? I just wanted to get your feeling, because I don't think I would feel that way. But at the same time, I would like to establish after you have actually expressed your feeling, and then, and so what are you saying to us, and what are you saying to the department? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think you did a good work, pardon. But, you know, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different outcomes is a hallmark of madness. Every time you come and give us a good report about what is wrong, but the people keep on doing the same thing over and over again because of one lack of competence, capacity, consequences from transgression, corruption, and low accountability. That you cannot do anything about it. Just telling us that this thing happened, then we can deduce that it was because of this mentioned things here, like lack of consequences, lack of capacity. Everything follows each other. If you have no capacity to do anything, you can't do it best. And if there are no consequences for what you are doing, you'll keep on doing it, and so on and so on, and it keep on repeating ad nauseum. So, but you see, we don't say you must say what we must do, what consequences must be taken, and must be made to happen to the transgressors. It is, I don't think we have, what can I say, the power to go and visit or consequences on the transgressor. All of us just know what has happened, maybe even how it happened and why it happened. It's for us to sit down and find out, not so much the consequences, how to solve the problem systematically and systemically until it is no more there. And the first thing is capacity. Capacity can be given to the practitioners. They can be capacitated. And when they are capacitated, then they can be able to do the work properly, conscientiously, and with due respect to accountability and so on and so on. Otherwise, every year we come here, get nice tips, get nice reports, what has happened, why it has happened. It doesn't help us to say there was an irregular expenditure. Okay? Fine. Maybe if you say, what actually you mean by irregular expenditure? Who did what irregularly and how? And what could have been averted? Of course, if you have malicious intent, there is no way you can preempt that one. But if it's lack of consequence, I mean lack of maybe capacity, then we can say, oh, he didn't know that if you just keep on buying things which you are not going to use, like building hospitals, you see, there were clinics that were built, they were not being used. After they bought equipment and put it in there, that is not being used. It's fruitless expenditure, isn't it? If you are going to build a clinic next to a hospital, you equip it and find that you can't use it. Or you build a clinic because you have money to build it, there is no personnel to manage. That's lack of planning. And that's wasteful expenditure. You know, if we could get to find out why this particular lack of expenditure, maybe this clinic was not used because there was no personnel, nobody planned for personnel. They just built it because it maybe there was a need for a clinic, but then there's no personnel, there was no planning, actual thorough planning. And that's really scary because we're supposed to be running the system. And the system should be running on autopilot. Just do it and do it. Spend money that is there fruitlessly, or it makes us to think. We have to think differently and not do the same thing over and over again and expect different outcomes. So we have to do what we call paradigm shift. Otherwise, yes, we are just transgressing like them. Become transgressors. We're not solving the problem, and the problem will not be solved by exposing it or by. Yeah, I wanted to say certain things that may not be very correct to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a few questions. The main issue with the Department of Health is that the budget is not properly managed. We also have various provincial departments which are in shambles, just like some of the slides that were shown. Just look at the sheriff attaching the Gauteng Department of Health furniture based on non-payment of medical negligence claims. The Department of Health in KZN is also an absolute mess, as illustrated by the recent oncology crisis. In the National Department of Health, there was a 1 million increase in irregular expenditure. There is also 6.5 million in fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We need explanation about this. The surplus of the National Department of Health has decreased from 308 million to 185 million in a year. This is a massive decrease of 123 million in a year-on-year basis. Why did this happen? The AG found that although the National Department had approved policies and procedures to support the reporting of information, these policies and procedures were not implemented at the provincial level. Why is this? Why is there such a massive communication gap? It seems that the provincial departments failed to provide sufficient appropriate audit evidence to the AG. This needs to be addressed. The AG also found that the National Department did not have adequate internal controls to maintain records and ensure turnaround times to enable reliable reporting on achievement of targets. Coming back to some of the slides to show, were all material misstatements corrected by the National Department? Please explain slide 16, 17 more clearly on the measurement of value for money. 1 million to 10 projects did not yield plus 10 million expected value in work. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Honourable members, well, some of the issues that we are raising as members will require to raise them with the department. Some of them are departmental. Of which the age you might find difficult to respond to them. So they will be able to know what belongs to them. And those that anything that doesn't belong to them, that belongs to the department, leave it will deal with the just to also have a bite, clarity or just to have an understanding or just to sort your views on some of the issues that you raised. Did the department manage to explain to yourself why are they failing to pay attention? Was there any explanation as to sort of the person to engage? We must be able to compare what they're going to tell us and what they told you for their failure to comply with the treasure application to ensure that it's in I'm raising this because when they come, they are going to tell us another story and you will not be here. So at least if you can just get an indication, what explanation do they do? Why are they failing service providers who can do this? This is a complete contradiction of PFMA and administration. And we see that it's continuously a challenge of the regulation, which is mainly as a result of entities or departments not following the or not complying to the laws of the regulation. Have you tried AG to understand why this conduct is being done? Why is it continuously persistent? Is it have you tried just to understand why people are doing this? Is it because they don't understand the law? Or is it delivery? Because some people are doing it deliberately to hide corruption.
when they're supposed to go for quotation, they decide no, because they want to appoint their own friends. They decide to not to follow. When a project is above 500,000, instead of going into a tender because they want to do certain things, or if it becomes open for bidding, what the company that they want might not be able to win the bid. So they decide to do quotation and give to I mean, there is this continuous regular expenditure that the people are doing, avoiding just to follow the law and compliance with the regulation. Is it ignorance in your own view, deliberate, or is the misinterpretation of the law? I'm raising this because National Department last year, they incurred an irregular expenditure. And they came and argued that they had to do what they had to do because services were in danger. It's when they took, instead of transferring money to provinces, they then took money to externalize, because provinces, when money goes to them, they're not paying to externalize. And as a result, and then they had to do something in order to make sure that NHLS is paid and services. But then ages says no, if not complied with that. I'm saying they might come even now and tell us another story. Which story sometimes becomes convincing and unavoidable for certain things to be done in a particular way. So I just want to understand in your view, in particular the National Department, what was the main reason that they explained to you for incurring this irregular expenditure that they incurred this much? So that we understand what happened and what explanation they give to you, so that we're able to see what explanation are they going to give to us and be able to compare notes and see the extent to which this explanation is real, that it makes such good sense. Because not all irregular expenditure doesn't make sense. Some irregular expenditure becomes necessary as long as the company is not going to become regular. But there are some that are not necessary, they're just being done. So we just want to understand that. The year in and year out, we've been raising this matter with the department, and we're not getting a joyful answer. And it's not just the National Department of Health. It's almost all government departments. Year in and year out, when you compare the expenditure and the performance, there's no correlation. For example, the department's performance is 55%. The expenditure is almost 100%, 99%. It's almost 100%. But the performance is 55%. Which means, but all the money is gone. they achieve almost half of the target with 100% expenditure. In your own analysis, what's your view as AG when you see this? Where is the problem? Because we expect at least to even to be closer, even if it's not exact. We expect that performance and expenditure should be closer to each other. But these ones, they are far apart. They are not closer to each other. What could be the reason? It's not something that is happening this financial year only. It has been happening all the years. We just want to, in your own analysis, independently, what has been your own understanding? Why there's no such a correlation between expenditure and performance in government? And then the other issue that we are worried about, which is also the financial viability. Not just of the national department, but of the health sector. If you look the accruals that each province incurred vis-a-vis what remains as a rollover, which normally they roll over zero, but they incurred accruals running to millions. And most of the accruals are not even within services that were rendered in March or February. Most of them are accruals that date back to December, January, February, which means, firstly, payments are not done within the required period, and then secondly, if they will have spent that money, if they will have paid the same money, they will have incurred another item. What, in your own analysis, as an independent, What is your thing? What is your analysis? Why are we in this state of that? In all problems. Was it? when we had a meeting with President, they reflected that no, they are underfunded by 1.9 billion. That's what they said. And when you look how they, MEC was saying goods and services, they've got an accrual of more than 700 million, and they've spent, they don't have a rollover. Where exactly lies the problem in your own view as independent? Because we are told a different story, so one just understand, maybe you've got your own, you did make your own analysis and be able to answer, to tell us maybe in your own view where lies the problem. The problem of value for money is it, if you can just explain, is it no value for money because of the high cost vis-a-vis product, or is it because of the quality that it produces? So there are two types of value for money. It can either be poor quality. It can either be that, no, this bargain costs 5 rand, but they buy it 20 rand.
that's also another problem in government. So where exactly is this problem that you have identified as this issue of value for money? So that just for a better understanding as well. The department, even then, I would have been reporting about the validity and the reliability of the performance information as a problem. And in this financial year that we're in now, they've decided to remove many things from the ATP. Is it solving the problem anyway? Is it going to solve the problem of the validity and reliability? Because that's what they've decided. They've decided to remove many of the targets. And they said, no, that thing doesn't belong to us in any way. It belongs somewhere. And that somewhere is a problem. Though our worry was that, though it's being performed, most of them by province, but they are being performed on the conditional grant. Each conditional grant does, it's also being approved by us. It's part of the budget of the national department. It's not outside. It's not part of the money that is equitable share. It is part of the department's budget that gets approved by us. But there are no targets for them because they're saying, no, we don't spend the money. We only receive the money and pass it over somewhere. But that, does that take them away in terms of the responsibility? Does that take the responsibility away from them in terms of performance, when money is appropriated to them, but they say, no, we don't use the money. Yes, it gets appropriated, but we don't use it. It's used by somebody else, which you don't have control over, which is profit. The issue of infrastructure. That's the problem really. I'm raising this because when the department comes, tells you whether you're in the provincial government or not, tells you no, we're not delivering infrastructure. We're budgeting, we're not delivering. Delivering of infrastructure is done by public works. It's not us. So if the infrastructure is poor quality, if it gets delayed, it's not completed on time, it's not our problem. It's not as a result of our problem. It is a result of the implementing agency. How do we manage the two problems in your view? Because that's what you get. Says, no, we're not responsible for deciding on the tender. We're not appointing consultants. We're not designing. We only give them the list, and then they then put up their own process. Which processes we don't have a determination on. Which process we don't have a say on. When a project is meant for 6 months, it takes for a year, we don't have control as hell, you know? Because it's public works that use the land, it's not us. And the service level agreement, because they are not being appointed by health,
being appointed by the company. Well, so the service level agreement on any infrastructure should therefore be between the appointee, which is public works, and the service provider. And therefore, if the service level agreement is not being managed, health becomes helpless in the whole system. What has been your experience as a spokesperson? Because I see you are clapping all of them together. What is that health is not doing properly on this vis-a-vis the implementation? Because even the payment, you find they don't bill health bad in other forms. They build public works. Public works must be able to authorize payment. Then if they agree that the work that is done needs to be paid, they then send it to health, and then health then, only then that health can pay. Where exactly do you think there should be an improvement? Either on the health side, so that we understand where are they leaking as a health. So that by the time we begin to say, how then do you deal with the issue of public health? Because everywhere there is an outcry of public health. And therefore, even health, therefore, sometimes they become less to us in any way. Whatsoever efforts that you're putting yielding any results because the ball is stopped with public works. If public works is not playing the ball, there's very little that health will be able to do.
If you can just try to clarify that issue from your own perspective and from your own understanding as the Auditor General, and what do you think needs to be done in this cycle of health and thanks very much. I am not sure whether we can break for 5 minutes just to allow yourselves to say who responded and what. Can we break for 5 minutes?
don't make it 50 galop.
Okay. Oh, I think the right.
Thank you.
Members, can we start?
Questions or comments that maybe we may not have addressed, the committee can just indicate to us and we'll try and respond formally after the session and we can't cover it in the next 15 minutes. But first and foremost, Honourable Chairperson, thank you for the questions. I'll try and deal with the easy questions first. I'm not saying easy questions, I'm just saying the questions for which there are immediate responses quickly. The regression in Northwest, I think if Honourable Mkonzo can quickly check on the screen, they actually regressed in that other year already. So they were already purple from 2015-16 already, and then they just continued in the same vein for 16-17. But some of the reasons, and this will also cover some of the questions asked with regard to, you know, the accrual process, why are some of the guys incurring irregular expenditure, and why is there no movement? It's really as a result of not having proper systems and processes in place to be able to account for your day-to-day activities. Remember, you must account for your day-to-day activities via the invoice that I'm signing today to get the service, but also record in terms of the performance. So, and while I'm signing that invoice, I must make sure I'm delegated and I've got the proper authority. So there's a compliance aspect, there's a financial statement aspect, and there's a performance information aspect in that one instance where you're signing off the transaction. So from my point of view, generally it's just as a result of lack of systems and policies and processes. And I link it to this slide. If honourable members recall this slide, on slide number 11, so slide number 12. So if you see on slide number 12, you'll see some of the key controls which we say should be existing in an environment for you to make sure that you can report correctly, you're able to deal with your issues. So if you look on the left-hand side on the block there, which says status of key controls, proper record keeping, daily and monthly controls, regular and accurate and complete financial reporting, those are the controls that should be in place for you to, in order for you to make sure that you produce credible, accurate, and reliable reporting. I know this slide only deals with the national department and the entities at national, because I remember we're giving the portfolio committee this feedback. We only consolidated the 9 provinces to give you their sector overview, but they table their own reports at the respective provincial legislatures. So they'd be best advised to give a little bit more context in this regard. But it's something, the picture will look something like this, and you'll just see different colors where the green and yellow is indicated. Probably you'll see a little bit more red where those controls are not working, but you at least have a sense of the type of controls you look at. And then the issue on the NHLS regressed, but it's also as a result of the systems and policies that are not in place. For example, specifically on the irregular expenditure, they were even making payments on expired contracts. So yes, you have a contract that's in place, but then you know, because you, and then if you take one step back, if you implement proper contract management says, I've got a 5-year contract, so on a 6 months or quarterly basis, I must monitor, so I must say, of the 60 months, how many months are remaining? You must take it off. Because you know yourself, if I have to procure this type of service, it's going to take me 6 months. So then you know 8 months or 7 months or 6 months before that term ends,
I must already start engaging in a new process to try and get new service providers if there are other service providers out there who can provide the same service. So if you don't do proper contract management, you wake up in month 60 or month 59 of your 60-month contract, and now you need to, now you can't stop the contract because the service needs to happen, and that's normally when they start paying. And in some of them, in some of the contracts, it sounds like that even they weren't aware that they would even pay some of those expired contracts up until it was serviced as a result of the audit process. But I'm speaking under correction because on the slide we do indicate that the audit is not being done by the office of the AG, it's done by the own appointed auditors. We just get the information from them. But those are some of the reasons why irregular expenditure has ballooned. And if you look at the, even the slide itself, honorable members will note that even though financial statements, they were producing credible financial statements, because like I said in the beginning, you can fix your financial statements, they still had issues over the past 3 years on compliance. So you see there's a cross on the compliance block, then there's a cross on the compliance block for 14-15 and for 15-16. So you may find that some of these issues were just here, and now starting to surface a little bit more in terms of the work that we've done. So that's the reason for the regression. And then there was a comment that Honorable Mkonzo asked about the heavy reliance on consultants. I think I'll answer that with a year-on-year as you deal. I think similar sentiments were shared by Chairperson. Then the detailed questions asked by Honorable Hugo, you correct me if I'm saying it incorrectly, Honorable Hugo. The first one around the surplus. Remember, this is a department, and the department is not supposed to have savings. If you go to government, you say to the government, give me 100 rand. I'm just going to use a very simplified example, you have to excuse me. If you say to government, I'm going to buy 10 pens. One pen is going to cost me 10 rand. That's your budget that you put in. Then as the year goes by, when the end of the year comes, because you're trying to achieve the target of buying the 10 pens, you are supposed to have not have a saving left unless you got the pen cheaper and not the 10 rand, maybe you got it at 8 rand. So which means you could either have bought more pens, you could have had more service delivery, or which means that the money is then redirected to somewhere else. So they're not supposed to have a surplus in terms of the setup of how departments go and ask for money to go and implement and achieve certain targets. A surplus means they had a saving at the end of the year. Saving means either you did not achieve all of your targets, so using the same example, 10 pence at 10 rand, so 100 rand budget given, end of the year I come and I say I've only spent 80 rand, so I've got 20 rand remaining. So either I only bought 8 pens or I got the pens cheaper, like I said. And if you look at the performance is not correlating to the spending. The money is gone, but the performance is not there yet. So the movement from 300 to 100, it's just dependent on year on year. So you go for this year, you say, I'm asking for this allocation. Whatever's remaining goes back to the first class anyway. So the spending trends will depend on the performance, what they planned, and the costing thereof. But essentially, in the ideal environment, if we do our planning properly, we do our budgeting processes properly, we're not supposed to have a saving because we are expenditure-driven government. We take money and we go spend unless we got better value for money where we could do more with the money, or we achieve the 10 but having purchased them at a cheaper cost. And then there was a question around the policies and procedures. I think the long and short to that question is just a basic yes. There are certain, I think it's prevalent across the portfolio, it's evident from the outcome that you're seeing, it's purple instead of the yellow and the green. There is some work that's required to be done in terms of making sure that we implement design policies and procedures so that we can manage and control our day-to-day activities, so that we can account for our things and ensure that ultimately we report also accurately on our performance. I think that covers the one where we spoke about the provincial departments and the lack of supporting evidence on financial statements on AOPO. The root cause thereof is really dependent on environments, like Honorable Chairperson said. You could find that they don't have supporting evidence because there's nobody doing the job. So there is a capacity issue. So the lack of supporting evidence is because nobody is there doing the job. Or you may find that there are people there, they are fully appointed, they are in the position, but when you go and you want to verify certain reported performance and targets, the information is not there because nobody said, hey, there's a policy. You must record this on a weekly basis or on a monthly basis and ensure that you collect your information so that you're able to substantiate your performance. So it's a combination of both, and really you have to go to the individual provinces to understand what is really applicable in each individual space in this regard. And then there was the question on the irregular expenditure. I think we're moving now more on the concept discussions now. Honorable Chair asked the question, and Honorable Mkonzo and Honorable Maitrela shared the same sentiment. The long and short of the question that was asked, yes, it's disheartening. If you come every year, you become despondent. Every year you report the same thing. And that's why we're trying to also sensitize the portfolio committees, engagements with ministers, engagements with accounting officers, by showing you over 4 years there's been minimal movement. So it's not that we don't, it's not affecting us as well. We are affected by it. Some guys, you audit teams, you walk in and you already know what the environment is going to be like. And unfortunately, we have to do the audit. The law says we have to do the audit. Money was taken from the government fiscus. We now have to say, has that money been spent appropriately in terms of the assurance model that's required to be provided by the auditors? So as long as government gets money and we're an expenditure-driven government, there's always been audit process to give assurance and credibility on what has been reported. As far as why the outcomes are not improving, this is now where, and Honorable Chair summed it up nicely to say, some things are on the stoop of the officials, because they've been delegated and tasked in terms of the PFMA to do certain things. For example, PFMA is quite clear. If you have an instance where you incur irregular, fruitless and wasteful unauthorized expenditure, the accounting officer must investigate and determine what went wrong. It's there. There's financial misconduct paragraph, there's a consequence management paragraph in the PFMA. Once the investigation has been conducted, we can determine what is the problem, what went wrong. Was there an official that didn't understand? Because then you know how to fix it. Okay, let's give him awareness training, let's give him training session, let's, you know, technical capacity building from that point of view. Or maybe we recruited the improper official into this space who doesn't now understand how to execute the activities as required. So once only you've done that investigation, you'll be able to understand why did things go wrong in the manner they went wrong and be able to implement remedial action. But if you determine that there is some wrongdoing or untoward behavior as part of this process, then the accounting officer must take action by taking a disciplinary action against that official if included in the PFMA. If you go back now, part of our root causes that we're communicating here is lack of accountability and also slow response in addressing some of the issues. So we report the issues, and then sometimes they get parked and say, it's being investigated, we will follow it up. So you come next year, because nothing has been done about it, the culture and the behavior does not change. You'll have the same finding again. As far as the Office of the AG is concerned, when it comes to, you know, the aspect of why certain irregular expenditure was incurred, like Honorable Chef was saying in the beginning, is it because we want to gear the processes that it benefits some of our associates or acquaintances? We don't know that, because as soon as you establish that, it means you've established criminality. Now, the Office of the AG is currently busy reviewing the Public Audit Act. The amendments which are proposed are currently lying with SCOAC now for approval, or consideration, if rather say consideration, because if I use approval, I'm almost saying they might just rather stamp it and sign it. So it's lying on the desk of SCOAC for consideration. Some of those amendments will include ability to refer. So when we do the audit and we say, okay, that's irregular expenditure, but when I consider, this is a supply chain management official, he's a practitioner, he's experienced, he shouldn't have gotten this wrong. Then we can refer to the SIU, PPSA, whichever relevant institution that's got investigative authority, that they must follow it up. Because obviously our audit, we don't look at criminality, we just look at what's in the evidence. But if you see there is some indication, you then can refer it. And hopefully that process will give a little bit more empowerment as to the audit process. And then we'll be able to also see a better consequence management. So, and then also in terms of irregular expenditure discussion, this is quite important, because as far as supply chain management is concerned, the law actually allows for you to deviate from the processes. The law says when you realize, I cannot, it's not practical for me to go get three quotes, or this is the sole provider, the only guy that provides the service, you can then deviate and say, I'm not following proper procurement processes. But Treasury's guidelines are quite clear. Then we need to clearly document and motivate your reasons. And these reasons should be reasonable and justifiable. So when Honorable Masalela picks up that deviation, you must be able to understand, okay, this was the problem or the emergency, this is what happened, this is why it was required, and hence as a result, we're taking this decision, and it's the discretion part I was also referring to as part of the accountability model. So now I'm taking this decision by not following processes so that I can ensure that service delivery happens. So it is allowable, but it's more often than not, when you go to these environments and you audit, you find the reasons are not justifiable, they're quite weak, or they're not even documented. You just say, nope, there was this need. So as an auditor, because I work on evidence, I cannot assess what your intention was when you were taking the decision, and the only way I can do that is if you have the proper signed documented evidence that you present for audit. And it's a simple process, but it's quite a complex process in this regard. So that's the overall concept issues. As far as the financial viability is concerned, I think this is also, not, I must stay away from saying I think, if one considers the environment within which we are faced, there's a certain, we ask money, well, before we ask money, there's a mandate. You have certain key targets and objectives that you must achieve. Then you say, I analyze, I'm going to do the following in the current year, and to do the following in the current year, I'm going to need the following X amount of money. So it deals with your budget process, it deals with your planning process. So you must be able to make sure that by the time you ask for money during your budget process, you're asking for money that fits and will allow you to achieve your mandate, bearing in mind the fiscal constraints within which we operate. So how do then, for example, the Department of KZN, if they say we're underfunded, but yet they submit a plan saying, I will achieve the following 10 targets, and to achieve the following 10 targets, I want the following 100 rand. So then you come back, and you've only achieved 50%, but the 100 rand is gone, and then you say, no, actually I'm underfunded. I actually need more money to achieve the following. I think that's just at the concept level. Budgeting and planning processes needs to be bolstered up in the sector in order for us to really understand how much it costs to deliver services. We know it's a complex environment, we know there's costing issues, things change, but I think, I mean, if you take when we do budgets and how long it lasts, it shouldn't have such a great variation. I mean, 50% is quite a big variation. And yes, Chairperson, we did mention that we explicitly put that slide in. It's just so that, again, to sensitize you, to give the portfolio committees food for thought, to say, hey, if you bring it all together, you can actually see now, because if you get the performance report of the department, it's here, that portion is here, that program is there. Now you just pull it back together, or all in one slide for you to say, yes, program one, they spend 99%, the achievement is actually 50%. We do know that targets are not the same. Some targets could be 50%, but those 5 targets that are remaining are maybe administration-type targets. It's for them to come and explain why the process is the way it is in terms of achievement. The last concept issue I'll talk about, Honorable Masalela, was the APP discussion. This is quite a complex discussion from our point of view, because it deals with a concurrent function. Again, this is one of those portfolios where there's a concurrent function. There's a national department and a provincial department, and all of us are all responsible for ensuring services in the sector. And from that point of view, unfortunately, if you look at the MTSF is also quite clear where some of these responsibilities lie, and the management from the national department take their cue from the MTSF. And if you look at the MTSF, their target is included for them is only to monitor the implementation of the service delivery targets at provincial level. So they have correctly included whatever they need to include from that point of view, but the argument is, does the reporting requirements take away your responsibility in terms of also assisting in terms of your concurrent function? And again, that's a good question that Chair has asked, but again, it's something that potentially could be answered between discussions and deliberations between Chairperson and the portfolio committee as well as management. But for the current year, if management were to report on the APP, excluding those findings, because where the reporting challenges were lying, potentially they could move and see an improvement in the audit outcomes, because they'll only be reporting in terms of high level what they are responsible for. So they could see an improvement in terms of performance information, but is it, morally the right thing to do? That's a discussion between Chairperson and the departmental officials. So, and then the slide 16 and 17, the EVA, the earned value analysis. So what we've done here is we've identified there's quite a big number of projects within the environment. So with the management of the department, we said we're going to see if you are getting value from this process. And in order for us to conduct the assessment, we will focus on those four areas. So before you started, did you at least do a scope confirmation? So the contractor knew exactly what he was required to do, how and what spec to deliver. Did during the process we adhere to the specifications? So the specifications of what we agreed, the contractual, the constructive of the obligations as required by the construction environment. And then also in assessing this, when I look at what's on the ground, is it of the right quality, of the right spec? And then that allows me to be able to assess, am I getting value from this project? Value, that earned value analysis means, because it was work in progress, when we visited the project, The department had already spent, let's say, 100 rand on the project, but maybe the progress was less than 50% let me rephrase. If the budget was 100 and the spending was 50%, the actual money spent was 50%, when the auditors went and assessed, the level of what was on the ground was potentially less than what had been spent. So we are saying to you already at this stage, while you are building, you may potentially run into problems because you may run into overpayment problems. So for every 1 rand you spend in here, you are potentially not getting the same 1 rand in value, which is, I think, a good initiative and is used in the construction industry worldwide to sort of check all the phases to make sure that you're staying on par with your budget and on par with your goals that you're setting yourself out to achieve. You don't want to come at the end of the project, it should have cost you 100 grand and now you've paid 150, you only realize when you paid 150 on the day that you close off the project. So it's sort of also an interim tool that can be used, already early warning sign. You say maybe just pay close attention to those projects. Does not mean that there's fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because there could be potential savings upfront as the project progresses and you can still come in within budget in the end. But it's just for now saying currently, because it's work in progress, your earned value analysis, there's a red indicator that will spend some time and focus on those projects before you finalize them. And then there was a last question the chair asked. I hope I'm still doing okay for time. There was a question with regard to public works and the infrastructure process. I'll start leading the introductions in and I'll head over to Corey, who is our infrastructure specialist chair. I just deal with the PFM and 1+3 equals 3. From this point of view, it's important that we also understand that there's still a responsibility on us as health. Remember when we did the sector outcome, the four pillars, pharmaceuticals, infrastructure, medical equipment, and the IT environment. Infrastructure, unfortunately, is a key component or a pillar in us as the health portfolio delivering our services. So it does not exonerate us. We still need that to happen. I think the question then becomes, but the process dictates that we go through public works, and that creates frustration, because when there are delays, we say it's not the national department, it's actually as a result of public works delaying some of these processes. And there have been a number of initiatives and interventions put in place, like, for example, if they only act as an implementing agent, the department, like basic education or health, the department that's commissioning is still responsible for that infrastructure. So you are still responsible to go and appoint your project managers, make sure that you've got project management principles in place so that you stay on par with the project that you are requesting to be delivered. So yes, while they are the person who's responsible for getting the bricklayer on the ground and making sure the project moves, the project management and making sure that we have overall oversight and responsibility over the project is still ours. I'll hand over to Corey, who will just finalize the discussion on the infrastructure assets.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I was very glad when you posed the question this morning, because this was one of the things that lies on the heart of the problems that South Africa is experiencing in infrastructure delivery. Some of you that was around in 2008 might still remember we published a big report at that stage on infrastructure delivery on the health and education sectors. And in that report, it was clearly pointed out that there's a major problem in the relationship between the client departments, the client of health, Department of Health in this case, and the implementing agent. At that stage, most of the work was done by the Department of Public Works as implementing agent. But as time was going on, they were moving away from this, and now you will find a large number of different institutions such as the IDP acting as the implementing agent. That of course costs government more money, because the external parties ask a project management fee. If you're lucky it's 5%, but it can run up to considerable amounts of money. So the problem that we're experiencing is that the Department of Health says, I'm a health department. I don't have the skills to deal with infrastructure. After the 2008 audit, Chair, the National Department of Health made available funds to appoint staff at provincial level, engineers, to help support those departments with the process of infrastructure development. And what we have seen till now is that have been bearing good fruit. But what we are also seeing is that the availability of qualified individuals at provincial public works departments are forever declining. And the risk that those departments don't have the qualified staff to deal with these matters is ever increasing. So this relationship between the client department, Department of Health, and the implementing agency is a very important one. And it must be clearly understood as a relationship between employer and employee. The employer employs the implementing agency to do a certain function for him, but they must ensure that they exercise control over this employee to ensure that they are getting money, value for money at the end of the day. As Andries have indicated, in the work that we have done, we have seen many instances where that value for money is not being achieved. The Auditor General have, since we've done the big audit in 2008, also changed his own structure, whereby we now employ qualified engineers and quantity surveyors to be able to go on site and to vary out these things and point out the risks, hopefully at a point in time when it can still be fixed before things go wrong. Chair, the whole issue of how infrastructure in the health sector is being built is one of crucial importance. And it's an issue that this committee may want to spend some time on in the future, just to really get down to the bottom of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I hope we've answered most of the questions. If there's anything that remains unanswered, check in maybe to the Secretary of Medos, and then we'll respond accordingly.
No, thanks very much. Any other issues to interact yourself for further clarity before we meet the next week or so. Thanks very much.